This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. Seize if you try.
Happy heathens and infidels, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Welcome to Free Thought Radio, the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of freethinkers, atheists, and agnostics, more than 18,000 of us, working as a state church watchdog.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. Free Thought Radio, this show is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. This is the weekend of May the 19th, 2012. The show broadcasts on the weekends here in Madison and in other stations around the country, and also we podcast throughout the entire material natural universe.
We are going to talk in a little bit about FFRF's new exciting court victory in Colorado, and we will have on the phone with us on the second half of Free Thought Radio, the attorney who brought that lawsuit for us, who has taken many lawsuits, had many victories with FFRF, and that is Richard L. Bolton from Boardman Law Firm here in Madison, Wisconsin.
The governor of Colorado doesn't have a prayer. A three-judge panel of the Colorado State Court of Appeals issued a ruling in FFRF's favor on May the 10th. Rendering unconstitutional a series of gubernatorial proclamations that declare an annual Colorado Day of Prayer.
Our case was first filed in 2008, so it's a very welcome victory, particularly as the appeals court overturned a lower court ruling against us. So we'll talk with Rich Bolton about FFRF's very important challenge and victory against the Colorado Days of Prayer, this annual event that coincides with the Congressional National Day of Prayer, on the second half of today's show.
And we have some other news to talk about?
Yeah, the big news of the past week, of course, was President Obama's change of heart on gay marriage, and boy, does that have the fundies roiling.
In other news, Mitt Romney's speech a week ago Saturday at Jerry Falwell's Liberty University, where many evangelicals were unhappy that a Mormon came to speak. He was in this huge stadium there with thousands and thousands of believers giving that address. Here's just a few words from what he said.
But from the beginning, this nation has trusted in God, not man.
Which actually is not true. From the beginning, we've trusted in reason and in a secular constitution.
Yeah, the United States is a product of the Enlightenment, and we have a godless constitution, as we continually try to point out.
And that phrase, in God we trust, is a Johnny come lately.
And here's something else Romney said.
Marriage is a relationship between one man and one woman.
Listen to the applause. Au contraire, Monsieur Romney, according to a church in North Carolina, a true marriage is male, female, and God.
Oh, so it's a triple. What do you call it? Well, a tripartite marriage.
Right. Trigamy. A plural marriage.
A trigamy.
That was the marquee that was put up by Devon Park United Methodist Church in North Carolina, blatantly exploiting its status as a polling place by erecting this special election day caveat in support of Amendment 1, which... The other big news of the last couple of weeks is, of course, that passed banning marriage equality. And the Freedom From Religion Foundation has taken issue with this very flagrant abuse. We sent a letter May 11th to new Hanover County Elections Director Marvin McFadden and pointed out that of the 43 polling locations in new Hanover County in North Carolina, 11 were at that church, were at churches. And Rebecca Market, one of our attorneys, our senior staff attorney, did a little sleuthing and was told by the state election board that fully a third of North Carolina polling places are churches. So you can imagine the impact that that had on Amendment 1, which passed 61-39%.
Yeah.
Percent. And what we discovered is that they do have a buffer law. Most states don't allow any electioneering near polling places, but in North Carolina, the buffer law prohibits polling places from engaging in partisan advertising and soliciting votes only to displays 50 feet from the entrance of the polling facility. And so the church argued that their marquee was more than that, away from the entrance, and that it was perfectly acceptable for them to do this. So we did send a letter to the Board of Elections asking them to remove this particular church from a polling site, but also encouraging North Carolinians to take a look at that law, which obviously allows a lot of abuse.
And that Amendment 1, which bans gay marriage, passed, and the main agitators were religious people, including Billy Graham. His ministry took out 14 full-page ads in favor of Amendment 1, and his son, Franklin Graham, ran a commercial like this.
Hello, this is Franklin Graham. On May 8th, we have a very crucial vote here in North Carolina, and we have an opportunity to vote for the marriage amendment. This amendment affects all of us, and that's how we define marriage in this state. And I want you to take a stand for God's definition of marriage, and that's between a man and a woman. This is very critical. This is going to affect our state for years to come. So please vote May 8th. Support the marriage amendment. This is Franklin Graham.
Vote for Marriage NC sponsored this ad.
So I think it's about 34 states now have adopted these constitutional amendments prohibiting same-sex marriage equality. All of these amendments have come out of the churches, out of theocrats, been introduced by their lackeys in the legislature. There is no secular opposition to marriage equality. It's always the Bible. And look at the harm of religion.
Well, it all comes straight out of the Bible. The Bible is against homosexuality. You would think in the 21st century we would have progressed past that primitive age. The Bible even says that women are supposed to keep silence. Can you imagine if some pastor today were to get up and say women should not be allowed to vote?
Well, I can imagine that, Dan, because we have a clip. We're speaking of out-of-control pastors, and here's Jesse Lee Peterson, an Alabama reverend. I don't like to use that term. It's an honorific that ministers came up with. And the president of the Brotherhood Organization of a New Destiny. He's a frequent guest on Fox News, Sean Hannity. And he made these statements recently during one of his Sunday sermons.
I think that one of the greatest mistakes that America made was to allow women the opportunity to vote. We should have never turned it over to women.
Why not? What's the damage?
Matt Rothschild was just reminding me, I think it's the 140th anniversary of Susan B. Anthony getting arrested for trying to vote at the end of the month. And again, that was the churches kicking and screaming. They didn't want women to be given suffrage. They were the main opponents. And then later, the liquor industry.
Well, that's straight out of the Bible. If you're going to believe the Bible, not only should you stone to death homosexuals, but you should tell women to go home, keep their mouth shut, not be involved in their own government.
Well, we do still hear that, unfortunately. Now, I think we should end this segment with some more interesting news. And there have been four studies of interest on this whole free thought, religion and politics, harm of religion. Dan, do you want to read some of those?
Well, here are some. Here's a study about churches are too involved with politics. A Pew Forum poll conducted on March the 7th through 11th asked, should churches and other houses of worship keep out of political matters, or should they express their views on day-to-day social and political matters? The results were to keep out 54%, to express their views 40%.
So we're winning that one.
In that same poll, another statement was, there has been too much expression of religious faith and prayer by political leaders. Nearly half of Democrats, 46%, 24% of Republicans, and 42% of Independents said there's been too much discussion of religious faith and prayer by political leaders. Another study from the Wall Street Journal, church scams, totaled $35 billion. The Wall Street Journal reported on May 7th that of the $569 billion that churchgoers and others are expected to donate to Christian causes worldwide in 2012, about $35 billion, or 6% of the total, will end up in the hands of, as they say, money launderers, embezzlers, tax evaders, or unscrupulous ministers living too high on the hog. The article cites a study by the Center for the Study of Global Christianity at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary in South Hamilton, Massachusetts. The article notes that churches are not required to file IRS Form 990, that all other nonprofits must file. In fact, the Freedom From Religion Foundation does file that onerous form every year, which makes its financial operation transparent for donors of the public. Another study by the University of Chicago. This is good news. There is now a reported modest decline in religious belief. Sociologist Tom Smith, in the article Beliefs About God Across Time and Country, summarized May 14th in Foreign Policy, looked at belief in God in 30 countries between 91 and 2008. Citizens of the former German Democratic Republic had the highest rate of atheism at 52%. We're going there in a week, so we'll shake hands with some of those. Well, we're going to West Germany. Nations with the high numbers of non-believers are the Czech Republic at 40%, France at 23%, the Netherlands at 20%, and Sweden at 19%.
These seem a little low. I think that there are higher percentages in other studies, huh?
Well, at least it shows that there's a huge segment of the population. The most religious country in the survey was the Philippines, where I just came back from a couple of weeks ago, where 84% are sure that God exists. In the U.S., 61% are sure of the existence of God.
So actually, that's quite a decline, you know, where you see nominally 70 to 75% as believers, but actually, it's declining.
So only 2 out of 3 right now. The study concludes, belief in God has decreased in most countries, but the declines are quite modest. Do I have time for this one about compassion?
One.
Here's a fascinating story. Compassion motivates non-believers more. A new study from the University of California in Berkeley shows highly religious people are less motivated by compassion to show generosity than are non-believers. The results challenge a widespread assumption that acts of charity are largely driven by feelings of empathy and compassion, the researchers said. Social psychologist and study co-author Rob Willer said, overall, we find that for less religious people, the strength of their emotional connection to another person is critical to whether they will help that person or not. The more religious, on the other hand, may ground their generosity less in emotion and more in other factors such as doctrine, a communal identity, or reputational concerns.
Well, as our ads have said in the New York Times and the Washington Post, join those of us who put humanity above dogma. We'll be back in a minute to talk about some more complaints and victories, and then we'll talk with Rich Bolton about our biggest victory in Colorado State Court of Appeals against the Colorado Days of Prayer.
Hi, this is Jamie Georgia, and I'm delighted to be on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we hope today you'll join us at FFRF.org. And we are continuing with news. We'll be talking in a minute also with our litigation attorney, Richard L. Bolton, about FFRF's big victory in Colorado against a day of prayer proclamation. I did want a little bit of news update that those of us who have been following Jessica Ahlquist with great concern, there's a bizarre development this week where apparently 7 people are trying to intervene and appeal the judge's decision, the appeal decision ordering removal of the prayer banner. I'm sorry, the federal decision. And they're not even in the lawsuit, so I don't know how they can. I think it's going nowhere, but it's going to unfortunately maintain some of that momentum there in Rhode Island against that prayer banner in the school. And one other development, Arizona Governor Jan Brewer signed a bill May 11th to let religiously affiliated employers exempt contraceptive services from employees' health insurance, which is what the Catholic Church wants. So we've got a battle on our hands. And speaking of battles, we have many, many, many battles trying to get religion out of the schools. We have many victories, including persuading a North Dakota elementary school to stop the Gideons. We just got a response this spring that they won't let them back. But we have an ongoing fight over Gideons in another district, and we have...
Can you explain who the Gideons are?
Gideons are that male-dominated group that wants to promote New Testament Bibles. And
they publish the Gideon Bibles that you find in hotel rooms.
And
all that.
So we have a clip on our newest Gideon protest.
A Liberty Hill parent is upset that men offering Bibles were allowed into her daughter's school. Today she is speaking out while district administrators dodge questions about why the Gideons were invited into the school.
The Bibles were handed out at Liberty Hill Intermediate School during the lunch hour May the 4th. It was a gift that surprised Evelyn Pereira, who has two daughters at the school.
I think that a school is a place of learning and learning tolerance. They're at an age right now that they're highly impressionable.
Small New Testaments like this one were given to 5th and 6th graders by members of the Gideons International. Pereira, who is Jewish, says the men were given a room next to the cafeteria.
The mentality probably was these kids just wanted the gift.
The situation made for an awkward encounter with her daughter's classmates.
She felt scared and intimidated. She was put on the spot. So she just said, yes, I believe in the Lord. And she said that she was nervous for like 10, 15 minutes because she thought that if they figure out who and what she was, they weren't going to be her friend anymore. As a matter of fact, I don't even know if these people had a background check that was in the school. They're talking and intermingling according to the kids.
What happened here in Liberty Hill apparently is not an isolated incident. A National Civil Liberties Watchdog group actually tracks these kind of cases. The Freedom for Religion Foundation has had several run-ins with the Gideons, according to spokesperson Annie Laurie Gaylor.
This is absolutely impermissible. As parents, we teach our children not to accept gifts from strangers, and here they come onto school property with their so-called gift of religion. It really is the worst of manners, and I do call them predators. They wouldn't want imams coming in and handing out Qurans. And what the Gideons are doing is usurping parental authority, and they're violating the law.
The foundation is expected to send the school district a formal complaint letter.
That's Fox News out of Austin, and that Liberty Hill School is a school near Austin, Texas.
We did send out that letter of complaint, and this is a very chronic problem. The Gideon Society, which started in Bosco Bell, Wisconsin, and you know now they're visiting every hotel bayou. They are a male, as I said, male-only group. You have to be a man to be a full member. Women can be auxiliary members to help the men. And they target elementary schools. They go after fifth graders usually, sometimes fifth and sixth graders. And no matter how many times we chase them away, they'll come back. They'll find a principal or superintendent who likes them or doesn't know the law. They often enter the school. Sometimes they're taken around by the teachers. I mean, the abuses that we get are very egregious. We've had complaints where they were even chucking Bibles at kids on bikes.
Well, they were throwing them into a school bus window.
Right. When kids, you know, that's the one thing they warn children.
They were like tossing them in the window.
When you go onto a school bus, you must be very careful. They don't want accidents. And here are these people distracting them. And so we do prevail. I mean, the Supreme Court has spoken. There are two decisions they have let stand over a 60-year period. You can't obviously have Bible ministries coming into the schools to a captive audience and handing
out
Bibles.
That parents' concerns are legitimate. Who are these strange, unknown men coming into the school where my children are? What are they doing there? Have they had any background checks? Shouldn't schools be more concerned about the welfare of children?
Well, they should be, and we expect to prevail there in Texas as we did in North Dakota, but like I said, we often will prevail, and then two or three or four years later, there's another principal steps in, and they're right back there. And I think that they should be exposed for their predations on school.
Maybe
children.
They should put one of our Gideon stickers on each of those Bibles that they hand to children.
That's right. We have two Bible warning labels, and one's got a skull and crossbones saying, warning, this literal belief in this book will endanger your life and health. And then another one, written by Ruth Green, who wrote The Born Again Skeptic's Guide to the Bible, says, who was Gideon? And encourages you to read that part of the Bible because, boy, was he bloodthirsty.
Yeah. So stay tuned. After the break, we're going to speak with Rich Bolton, who is FFRF's main litigation attorney. We're going to talk about a great victory that we just had this month in Colorado. The governor of Colorado does not have a prayer. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is Free Thought Radio, and we'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Joey Carabetta. I'm treasurer of the Triangle Free Thought Society, and I'm excited to be on Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And some of you might know that Annie Laurie and I are not drinkers. We don't. We drink maybe twice a year, a little bit of champagne. Well, just this past week, we did uncork a bottle of champagne.
Two bottles
in the reception room at the Free Thought Hall at the Freedom From Religion Foundation in celebration of our most recent victory. And our litigation attorney, Rich Bolton, came in as well. And I had actually almost a full little glass.
Well, it was a very tiny. There were about, 18 of us. And it was the Cava Spanish champagne. That's pretty good. And we thought, we are going to celebrate. These victories are few and far between. And we never had gotten together to celebrate the federal National Day of Prayer case when Judge Crabb ruled in our favor in 2010. So we thought, we got to make up for that.
So we have Rich Bolton on the phone with us today. Hello, Rich.
Hello.
Glad to have you back with us. And this was a victory in state court. So why don't we let you explain the background of the case and then leading up to the very good decision we just got?
Well, we filed two lawsuits, and it's way back in 2008 at about the same time. One was in federal court here in Madison, Wisconsin, challenging the National Day of Prayer. And then virtually all of the states have been issuing similar state Day of Prayer proclamations to correspond with the National Day of Prayer. And so we filed a lawsuit in Colorado State Court challenging the local version of the National Day of Prayer. So we had both lawsuits going. The first one to come to an actual decision was in Federal District Court here in Madison. And Judge Crabb concluded on the merits that the National Day of Prayer violated the Establishment Clause. That decision, in the meantime, was reversed by the Seventh Circuit, but not on the merits. It was reversed on the basis that the court felt that the parties did not have standing to allow them to make the complaint.
Because we were not coerced, basically. Yeah.
Right.
Which isn't required to show a constitutional violation, as you always point out, Rich.
Yes, but nonetheless, the Seventh Circuit reversed, but did not reach then the decision on the merits that Judge Crabb had made, that the National Day of Prayer itself did violate the Establishment Clause. But because the decision was reversed on grounds of standing, her decision on the merits is basically vacated. In the meantime, we also had the state court action proceeding in Colorado. And one of the things that distinguished the Colorado case from the federal case is that some of the states have different, not all the states have the same requirements for standing as the federal courts do. And Colorado, in fact, has a different standard that allows, basically allows citizens to bring matters of great public interest to the court that would otherwise not be determined.
And I'd like to put in a kind word here now for the local plaintiffs who made that lawsuit possible. And they are Mike Smith, David Habecker, whom we've had on this show before, Timothy Bailey, and Jeff Basinger, who's a long, long, long time member. And so also FFRF was part of that lawsuit, but we couldn't have continued without them.
And also what's delicious about this Colorado decision, which I probably should let you finish talking about it, but this National Day of Prayer Task Force, which is in Colorado Springs, which is headed by Shirley Dobson, the wife of James Dobson of Focus on the Family, and her office is in the same building. She's been orchestrating, and her group's been orchestrating the National Day of Prayer federally and with all the states around the country, and she personally gave the proclamation to, it was Governor Ritter at the time, right?
Right.
Right. So tell us a little more about what happened in Colorado.
Well, in the meantime, the local judge, the judge at the lowest level, where the at the trial court level, actually ruled against us on the merits at the end of 2010. That we got a decision.
But the stand, he did not throw us out on standing. However,
he did not. He did. He, in fact, the standing issue wasn't really raised even by the state in that case until very belatedly. But the judge, the district court judge, concluded that we did have standing, but felt that the proclamations did not violate the Colorado constitutional provision that is essentially comparable to the Establishment Clause. So we did appeal that decision. And we had oral argument after extensive briefing. We had oral argument on April 2nd, just passed, and then we got a decision last Thursday,
which is May 10th. And it was too bad they didn't issue it on the National Day of Prayer.
A week earlier.
That would have been May 3rd.
Yeah. Well, but, it's nice to get it whenever we got it, but the decision. The decision that we got from the Court of Appeals reversed the trial court on the merits. Agreed with the trial court that we did have standing, but also concluded that the proclamations that were being issued by the governor, and I would add that these proclamations, even though Governor Ritter is not the current governor, the proclamations have continued by his successor. So the court concluded that the proclamations do in fact constitute government speech that gives the impression of governmental endorsement, and procedurally remanded back to the trial court for a determination of whether or not some sort of prospective injunction should be put in place.
Which it should be.
And so that's still on the horizon then. In the meantime, the state has 14 days from the date of the decision. So the decision was on the 10th, so they've got until the 24th to file a petition for or a request for rehearing by the Court of Appeals. I don't know whether they will do that or not.
They are getting intense pressure from the National Day of Prayer Task Force there in Colorado Springs.
But I think the pressure is not necessarily to request a reconsideration by the Court of Appeals, although they may, I don't know. But if they don't file a request for reconsideration, then their next step is to file a petition with the Colorado Supreme Court asking them to review the Court of Appeals decision. And they have 42 days from the date of the Court of Appeals decision to do that. So that would be
in June sometime.
Yeah.
Now, the court said very specifically they addressed the National Day of Prayer Task Force pressure. Mm-hmm. And they said that all the proclamations of the Colorado Day of Prayer were issued in response to annual requests from the National Day of Prayer Task Force, which has this overtly proselytizing theocratic mission. You know, it's Christian evangelical. They put on these events and they specifically exclude non-evangelicals. But also because they were basically seeking the governor's support, and that's how the court read it.
Right. And you know, this was one of the interesting issues that in the Colorado case came up. The governor's office basically said, well, we will issue proclamations that, you know, other groups can request proclamations, and we basically issue these proclamations as sort of a public relations issue. We don't. I thought it was kind of ironic because the argument that they made was that we don't really even think about these. This is just, you know, we just issue these proclamations without much thought. But the fact that we issue these proclamations by the request of someone who wants it, basically their argument was, doesn't give the appearance of the governor's endorsement. You're basically, it's simply the speech of the requesting party. But the fact of the matter is, the fact that someone requests the governor to do something doesn't mean that he's not endorsing. I mean, and particularly, as we know, in a campaign year, people request endorsements all the time, and those candidates request endorsements of other politicians. And
it's meaningful.
That,
yeah.
And they do that because they want to lend the prestige and credibility of that office or that particular individual to their particular cause.
And because we should point out that Governor Bob Ritter even spoke in 2007 at one of these exclusionary, events, mm-hmm. and held on the steps of the Capitol.
So we'll see what they do. It's a very gratifying decision. It's interesting to read some of the press by some of the people who aren't pleased with the decision, arguing that it's an unprecedented sort of intrusion by the courts. But the fact of the matter is, there are really only two decisions that have ever addressed the merits, and that was Judge Crabb's decision. And now this Court of Appeals decision.
Did you see the press release that the National Day of Prayer Task Force put out complaining bitterly about this victory of ours, saying that the National Day of Prayer has been ruled constitutional by the federal courts, which you and I know is not true.
Excuse me.
The fact that our case before the federal court was dismissed on standing does not mean that there was a ruling on the constitutionality of the National Day of Prayer.
Right.
We have to take a break here,
okay.
Rich. We're going to come back. We're talking with Rich Bolton, the Freedom from Religion Foundation's primary litigation attorney. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And we'll come right back to talk more about this and another interesting lawsuit that we are taking in the court. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Lee Parks from Apple Valley, California, and I am a proud lifelong atheist.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker.
We have on the phone with us Richard L. Bolton, who has brought many a lawsuit with FFRF, many, many faith-based victories, and we have a new victory in Colorado Appeals Court declaring unconstitutional the Colorado Day of Prayer proclamations that are issued every year by the governor.
A unanimous decision, by the way.
Yeah, and Rich, that was very sweet, wasn't it, to get all three of them to agree?
Well, it was. Before we broke, Dan, you were saying that, noting how the task force has tried to minimize this. But on the other hand, I don't know if it was in the task force or one of the, Liberty Council websites, noted that even though this is a state court decision, that it probably will have some broader significance in terms of how other states look at their own proclamations. So on the one hand, they're trying to minimize the significance of it, but I think there's also a recognition that when these proclamations get addressed on their merits, it's almost counterintuitive to think that a proclamation of a day of prayer isn't endorsing religion.
Yes. I mean, also Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. How can the National Day of Prayer possibly be constitutional.
Well, and so, you know, one of the things that we've, you know, been really battling over the last several years in federal court and elsewhere is, you know, access to the courts, because the standing rules are being, you know, really used to try and keep us out of court so that some of these issues do not get addressed on the merits. And when we've been able to get past the standing issues and into court, you know, we're finding that a lot of these things that have been offensive to the Establishment Clause and similar state provisions are not being upheld.
But so, because most states, like Colorado, have broader standing requirements, which is, in fact, in Colorado, you have a right as a citizen to have a government that follows the Constitution. And even on that alone, you can take a lawsuit.
And it's too bad we don't have that general rule everywhere.
Well, what you were saying, Rich, I think is true. This decision, even though it's not a direct precedent to other states, the reasoning and the language in here can be used. I mean, because it's really the arguments that are important here. The judges, before they issued their decision, they prefaced it by pointing out, our decision doesn't affect anyone's protected right to pray in public or private or alone or in groups, but that liberty is abridged when the state affirmatively sponsors the particular religious practice of prayer. Judge Bernard said in the decision in Colorado, a reasonable observer would conclude that these proclamations send the message that those who pray are favored members of Colorado's political community, and those who do not pray do not enjoy that favored status. There was a lot of good wording out of that decision.
Well, and you know, the whole point of having a proclamation from a high-ranking government official, whether it be in a state or at the federal level, is that, I mean, first of all, the Day of Prayer has been organized, basically, and promoted. I mean, it's on the books at the instance of an organization that wanted to have an occasion to engage in a national proselytizing event. But having high-level government officials issue proclamations is actually the whole point of the proclamation, is to add to the prestige, the government's prestige and credibility to the event. And
well,
that's what the judge is saying.
Let's read that. What did they say, Dan, on that issue?
Yeah, because otherwise, why do that in the first place?
Right.
In the decision, the judges said, these proclamations serve an exclusively religious purpose, and they are addressed to the public generally, extending beyond the walls of the legislature or the boundaries of the graduation hall to the borders of the state. They reflect an official belief in a God who answers prayer. At the same time, for those who do not believe in such a God, the proclamations tend to indicate that their non-belief is not shared by the government that rules the state. In so doing, they undermine the premise that the government serves believers and non-believers equally. And the decision goes on. They are not a small part of something larger. These proclamations don't serve a secular purpose. Rather, they stand individually as a call to actual worship or prayer. These proclamations are reasonably viewed as exhortations to participate in official prayers that have been composed as part of a religious program carried on by the government. The effect is amplified by the biblical verses and religious themes. So isn't it true, Rich, that the theme of these proclamations was submitted by this private group in Colorado?
Yeah, and you know, and the, kind of the interesting thing about that is that many states are still, even now, some of the states kind of backed off that, but many states still, their annual Day of Prayer proclamation will indicate that this year's annual theme is, and then there's some...
One Nation Under God, or whatever the task force has chosen.
Some biblical reference.
And that's the reason they've backed off, of course, Rich, is because of our lawsuit against the federal.
But many states continue to include that, and that as if there is some sort of official annual theme. Well, that official annual theme is coming from the National Day of Prayer Task Force.
And as you pointed out in our lawsuits, they're working hand in glove with the government. They are acting like a branch of the government. And even their website and their name alone makes it sound like, because there is a Congressional National Day of Prayer, makes it sound like they are the government.
And they're a narrow evangelical segment of Christianity that are pushing these things.
Well, we think it was a great victory, and you must have been very pleased too.
Well, you know, it was. As you know, we've had the courthouse door closed to us a few times recently, including in the National Day of Prayer Task Force.
Well,
but it's nice to get one where the actual merits were carefully considered, and I think, obviously I'm an advocate, but I thought that the court's reasoning is very, very defensible if the Supreme Court were to take the case. And, if you put that decision together with Judge Crabb's decision on the merits, I mean, nobody's been looking at, there are no decisions out there that look at these proclamations on their merits and say, it is quite obvious that their purpose is to endorse religion.
We could see from the decision that the court was actually using some of your very own reasoning and maybe some of your very own words that you put into the brief. Well, thanks, Rich, for all that great work.
And we should say that you can read about this. You can read the decision at fff.org/news. Go to the May 10th press release. And thank you so much, Rich.
You're welcome.
We'll have to have you back on to talk about the Parrish case in the future. Thank you, too, Dave McCann. Freethought Radio is produced by Dave McCann. Go to fffrf.org/radio, and you can sign up to get the podcast of this show.
Call 1-800-335-4021 if you want a sample issue of Freethought Today, or better yet, join, and you'll get 10 issues a year of our 24-page paper edited by Bill Dunn. It's full of information, a lot more detail than we can go into in this show. Lively, spirited, you'll like it. So go to 1-800-335-4021. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday